Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the lovely Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Join me like he does each week as the co-host of this program, the quarterback of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz. Stone is coming to you from his broadcast center in the Sunshine State of Florida. Stone, how you feeling, man? A lot was put in that road trip from Carbondale, Illinois to Fargo, North Dakota last week. Looked like it was going to be a ball game, and then it got fumbled all right away.
Yeah, my ass is still raw. 0-8 now when the Dogs travel into the Fargo Dome. Listen, you're taught to end the half with points. You're taught to end a drive with a kick. They did none of that thing. You're about to jog into the locker room up a possession for the first time in forever in that place. You would have had them thinking for once in their entire lives, but you fumble, and three plays later, Peyton and company, they go 80, and it kind of started an avalanche. I talk about that avalanche often, but there was just no getting away from it. This is a herd of bison, and when they're on the move, just get the hell out of the way.
Final score of that ball game was number 1 North Dakota State, number 6 Southern Illinois, 17. Looking at the stats, total yards 313 for the Salukis, 190 through the air, probably not going to get it done. And North Dakota State had 540 total yards, almost a perfect balance, 276 through the air and 264 on the ground. Number 2, South Dakota State, 31, Northern Iowa, 3. A lot of chatter amongst the Jackrabbit faithful after this one. They were not pleased with their performance. Stone, and I tweeted this, but for those that don't have the Twitter machine, if all you can do after a 31-3 victory is gripe, you should be arrested, and a judge should sentence you to walk a decade in my college football fandom, bro.
It's good perspective for Jackrabbit fans, moaning and groaning as you head into the locker room at halftime up 14-3. Jacks fans still talking about their offensive problems and what a nightmare the ball game was. I think if you fell asleep during the game and woke up to a 31-3 final score, you'd be happy. You're a top two team that's holding opponents to 3 points through four quarters in the middle of October. But I will say this, Kevin, because I think there is something to that chatter. Jack fans often talk to themselves about their own team, but this Jacks team does have a little bit of that Philadelphia Eagles feel right now. A little wobbly, although winning games, but when push comes to shove and we're forced to make a decision right now on if this is an actual team that's ready to contend for a national championship in Nashville, the answer to that, as we stand today, is no.
Number 3, Montana 28, Cal Poly 9. Cal Poly controlled this game for the first half, took a lead into the locker room, and then a very convenient pick 6 for Montana. Poor choice by the quarterback, things you cannot do, and beat that football team in that place, Washington Grizzly Stadium in Missoula. And from that moment on, it was all Grizzlies.
Yeah, that stadium will just suck the life out of you and wrap you up like a boa constrictor. But Montana spent, I don't know, half an hour just spinning their tires. Ayat struggling, this offense struggling, defense doing what they needed to do, but there's no cure for a struggle in the first half, like ripping off 3 touchdowns in that fourth quarter. This team knows how to level up. It's obvious. I think when I watched this game, all I could tell myself was this Grizzlies team looks playoff ready. They just played really good football in big moments. And that's all credit to, of course, Mr. Bobby Hauk.
Number 4, Tarleton State 41, Utah Tech 23. This ball game was closer than that final score would lead you to believe. Utah Tech has played everybody tough all year. I like that football team a lot. Their effort deserves a better result each week. But Tarleton State, backup quarterback again. They haven't really missed a beat on the offensive side of the ball, but those defensive questions are starting to pop up in my mind and a lot of other people's minds, Stone. Is this a defense that can do enough in the playoffs to make them a legitimate national championship contender? I believe the jury's still out on that.
The jury's 100% still out. And also, I personally am confident in saying no. This defense will not hold up in the postseason. I understand you don't have Victor Gabalis, but you're still scoring 40 points at will, no matter who your opponent is. Utah Tech, though, is like the opposite of a Mercyhurst for us. It's a team that you see that has to go through the gauntlet and play some of the big dogs, but they score a lot of points. They're kind of a fun watch. But 64 combined points in this one, and that's the theme with this club.
Number 5, Montana State 48, Idaho State 14. The transitive property is not any way to do business or judge college football teams, but the Montana team that's located in Bozeman, the Montana State Bobcats, they handled Idaho State at home. The Grizzlies struggle with them on the road.
I like pulling quotes from press conferences. I think press conferences are grossly underrated in the year of 2025. This from Brent Vegan. Quote, we said going into this game that the defense would feed the offense, and that the offense would feed the defense.
That's just football at its core. I think the boys up in Bozeman just play football each and every Saturday. They don't care. And unlike a South Dakota State team and a few of these other guys up at the top of the heap, they get better each and every week. And I think there's a certain wrinkle that you're starting to see that is going to pay dividends, that is going to open itself up come playoff football. And it's the fact that Justin Lampson is using his legs. He had 16 carries for 60 yards and a touchdown, getting in a groove, calling plays, getting to that part of the play sheet that you loved oh so much with Tommy Mellott. I like Justin Lampson. He's coming into his own, and he's leading this Montana State team. They're dangerous. They're dangerous. I think they're a better football team than Montana right now, just schedule permitting. We'll see in the brawl.
Number 7, Tennessee Tech, 27. Charleston Southern, 13. It was really bad weather in Charleston last week. Even though Charleston Southern don't play there, they play in North Charleston, which is a completely different thing. The weather was bad in the Lowcountry of South Carolina last week. Torrential downpour. I think that had a little bit more to do with the lack of offensive explosion that we've come to see from Tennessee Tech than the Charleston Southern Buccaneers defense did, Stone. Number 14, UC Davis, 45. Number 15, Northern Arizona, 24. UC Davis is rising. Each week, talk about a football team that gets better. That's the UC Davis Aggies. And Northern Arizona, they are fading fast, Stone.
They are. They're not a bad ball club, and I thought this was going to be a lot closer than it was, but there's a certain somebody that had something to say about that, and that is FCS Nation's Offensive Player of the Week, Mr. Caden Pinnick, a career high in pretty much every statistical category that a quarterback has to offer in a ball game. And I will say this right here, right now. The Caden Pinnick era has officially started. He is going to be the Aggies quarterback for a very long time. If he doesn't get poached, who knows? But this UC Davis team is going to go as he goes, and he just steady climbs the mountain into a spot, and he's too young for me to say it, but playing football like one of the best quarterbacks in the country right now.
Number 18, Abilene Christian, 35. Number 20, West Georgia, 13. West Georgia was without the starting quarterback. That hurt them, but Abilene Christian has been an up and down team. When they are up, that's a very good football team. We saw them play very, very badly against Incarnate Word, who isn't very good. I think this is going to be the question for them going forward the rest of the season, is which one of these teams shows up? The one that wants to compete, the one that has a lot to prove, or the one that kind of gets a little lackadaisical, reads where they're ranked, knows where they're ranked, and goes out there and lays an egg.
An underrated stat here that I did want to make public was Abilene Christian. They're 6-2 in their last 8 games against top 25 ball clubs, and that bodes well because they play big in big games, and this team has postseason written on their forehead right now.
Number 24, Mercer, 38, Princeton, 14. Mercer went up to New Jersey, accomplished the goal they were trying to achieve. Atkinson looked really good again and didn't do anything dumb freshman quarterback mistakes. Mercer is a team. And somebody posted this under the top 25 thread. They posted the Undertaker getting up, right, from being prone and sitting up. The Mercer Bears have done that following that defeat to Presbyterian, Stone. This is a football team that is headed in the right direction.
Yeah, there's not a damn doubt about that. They're 5-1, and their only stinker was that Presbyterian game. Quarterback change seems to have ignited life into this team when we thought DJ Smith was going to be the shot caller for this club all season long. But Mercer, they play good defense. We know that. It's not like Princeton had a world-beating offense, but you love to see a lopsided scoreline like this, especially mid-October. It means Mercer's clicking on all cylinders, and that defense just seems to kind of gain momentum themselves, all 11-plus guys on that side. So this Mercer team playing good football right now, although Princeton wasn't that large of a test.
It's time for us to take a timeout, but before we do, just want to remind you that the review segment was brought to you by GameStrat. Looking to gain a real edge on game day? GameStrat is the number one choice for in-game video in the FCS and is trusted by championship programs at every level. With instant access to in-game video, lightning-fast uploads, and no internet required, GameStrat helps coaches make real-time adjustments that win football games. It's easy to use, ultra-reliable, and backed by top-rated support. Don't settle for less. Upgrade to GameStrat and keep up with what the top programs in the country are choosing for their in-game video. Visit GameStrat.com to learn more and schedule your demo today. That's GameStrat.com.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for us to put a bow on last week and then reveal the FCS Nation Radio Top 25 for Week 7. The FCS Nation Radio National Offensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual, is the fine signal caller from UC Davis, Caden Pennick. Last week versus Northern Arizona, Pennick was 25 of 29 for 348 yards, and count them, y'all, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 touchdowns. The redshirt freshman is getting it done for the UC Davis Aggies. The FCS Nation Radio National Defensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual, is Rohan Davey, linebacker from Rhode Island. Last week versus New Hampshire, Davey had 6 tackles, 1 sack, and in the most crucial part of the ball game, New Hampshire's driving to take the lead in the fourth quarter. He scoops up a fumble and returns it for a touchdown, 45 yards, and that led his football team to a much-needed victory over New Hampshire to stay in the CAA title race. Congratulations to Caden Pennick, quarterback UC Davis, and Rohan Davey, linebacker from Rhode Island, for being named the FCS Nation Radio National Offensive and Defensive Player of the Week, respectively. Brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. And now I hold in my hand the FCS Nation Radio Top 25 for Week 7. Number 1, the North Dakota State Bison. Number 2, the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. Number 3, the Montana Grizzlies. Rising back up to number 4, the Montana State Bobcats. Falling to number 5, the Tarleton State Texans.
Question, and this one goes for Tarleton State, Kevin. Have we ever, in the subdivision, seen a top five team that historically has never been inside the top five before stay there, solidify themselves as a top five team in the country while playing with a backup quarterback? Can you, the encyclopedia, remember anybody in a situation like this in recent history?
Well, how recent we talking, Stone? Because I got one right off the top of my head, man. How recent you want it? My lifetime? My football memory, because I got one, and it was 1992, and it was the Citadel Bulldogs. Jack Douglas hurts his wrist, and C.J. Haynes comes in. And for a couple of weeks, C.J. Haynes led the Citadel Bulldogs to victories. And Jack Douglas comes back healthy, and the Citadel finishes the 1992 regular season ranked number one in the country and is the number one overall seed in the 1AA playoffs in 1992. Number 6, the North Dakota Fighting Hawks. Number 7, Tennessee Tech. Falling to number 8, Southern Illinois. Number 9, the Monmouth Hawks. And rounding out the top 10, the Illinois State Redbirds.
A burning question that I have: if North Dakota, who is absolutely surging right now, beats Southern Illinois on the road, do they leapfrog a Tarleton State team, let's say, who beats West Georgia this Saturday by 7-10 points?
It's hard to move an undefeated team off, Stone. And Tarleton State has the FBS win over Army. They're playing with their backup quarterback, which we just had a kind of a conversation about, but not really. It was a really pleasant walk down memory lane for me, I might tell you. But I don't think so. I think that Tarleton is going to have to lose, or Tarleton is going to have to maybe just squeak out a 1-point win against somebody that's not very good. They continue to win. They continue to put up big numbers. It's hard to move them out of that number 5 spot, although I am open to them getting past if it feels like it should be done. Number 11 is Lehigh. Rising to number 12 is UC Davis. Number 13, Lamar. Rising like a bullet to number 14, the Mercer Bears. And number 15 is Jackson State.
You're higher than pretty much every single person in the entire country on Mercer. They're higher on our list. Kind of what drives that? What's the reasoning for it?
Absolute 100% SoCon homerism, Stone. There's no other explanation for that. That's not really true. I think that that Presbyterian game has shown to be an aberration. You're allowed to not play well 1 week. You're allowed to do that in a 12-game season. Mercer has looked good recently. Very, very good, and they deserve to be moved up. And that's exactly what we've done. Number 16 is Harvard. Number 17, Abilene Christian. Falling to number 18, Northern Arizona. Rising to number 19, Stephen F. Austin. And rounding out the top 20, the Presbyterian College Blue Hose.
Bluntly, is Abilene Christian ranked too low right now?
I don't think so, because they lost at a bad time, Stone. And they lost to a team, Incarnate Word, that isn't very good. And they got whipped by Incarnate Word. Absolutely manhandled. If that ball game would have been when Mercer lost to Presbyterian, we would have forgotten about it by now, wouldn't we? Like we're trying to do with Mercer's loss to Presbyterian. It was a loss at a very inopportune time by Abilene Christian. Number 21, Villanova. Number 22, West Georgia. Number 23 is Austin Peay. Number 24 is Gardner-Webb, and making their first appearance in the top 25 this year at number 25, the Southeastern Louisiana Lions.
Speaking of that first appearance, Southeastern Louisiana, you just talked about them creeping into the mix. What's the story behind that? What made you ultimately pull the trigger?
Undefeated against the FCS. Their FCS teams that they've defeated haven't been great. Their best win is over UTRGV, and they whipped McNeese, who I don't think is as good as UTRGV, and they beat Mississippi Valley State. These are not powerhouse programs this year, but they've been getting it done like we talk about from time to time. If you're going to be in one of these conferences that isn't the Valley, that isn't the Big Sky, and you want to be talked about like one of their teams, well, you need to really whip your conference opponents, and Southeastern Louisiana's doing that so far. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, it'll be the preview segment where Stone and I will preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. I know you'll want to hang out for that. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for the preview segment, y'all. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I take a quick trip all over FCS Nation, and we preview the biggest games taking place this week. Up first, number one, North Dakota State is at Indiana State. North Dakota State in the past has had some trouble on the road at Indiana State, but this NDSU team I don't believe is going to have very much trouble with anybody. They've played in a very tough place to play already in Charleston against the Citadel. They are not bothered by being on the road or playing outside. Unless the trees just got a whole bunch up their sleeve that we ain't seen yet, you gotta figure that number one, North Dakota State goes there and handles their business. Number two, South Dakota State is at Murray State.
Oh boy, here's an opportunity for Jack fans to get some of that hope back, the hope that they need offensively. Although it's false hope because they're playing a racer squad on the road. It's not a very hard place to play. It's also not a very hard team to play. But Jack fans, they will fall for it, and they will come out of this one very happy.
Well, like my friend Pick Dundee says on the College Football Experience, Sacred Hot is at number three, Montana.
This slate is just full of cruisers. It's been tough up to this point to even speak about the opponents, but Montana is class, and Sacred Hot, kids, just go to class. Montana has got to come out of the gates, unlike they did last week, and put a lot of points on the board in that first half, so they can forget about it and move on and put another W in the column, because it seems like they're doing that at a very high clip right now.
Number 22. West Georgia is at number four, Tarleton State. I'm interested in this one, Stone. West Georgia should get the quarterback back this week. And these two teams don't have a lot in common. Tarleton State, up and down the field, up and down the field. West Georgia, running game, defense. This could be a very spooky, as we get now towards Halloween, matchup for Tarleton State here.
We align on a lot, especially this game right here. This is popcorn. This one has trap written all over it. Like you said, they don't know each other. They don't play the same style of football. West Georgia is not afraid to muck a game up. Tarleton State, they haven't dropped a bead of sweat all season. And I think West Georgia, especially with QB back into the mix, has a chance to really, really shake up the top five, let alone the top 10 here. The story here is Victor Gabalis, though. He's got to be on the field. If he's in the lineup, you got to like Tarleton. But if not, it is game on.
Number six, North Dakota is at number eight, Southern Illinois. The name of the game here, if you're the Salukis, is don't let the Bison beat you twice. You got to flush that ball game right out of your system, because you got a really tough North Dakota Fighting Hawk squad coming in here that has a lot to prove, and they want your heart, Stone, and they want your blood, and they want it now. And if you don't play the best game you've played this season so far, they just might get it on your home field.
Yesterday's price is not today's price. I have full-blown confidence that they will, or have already thrown, that Bison tape in the garbage. I mean, there wasn't much to watch here, and you have a team coming into your turf, which is good because you don't have to go play in the Alera Center. Now, the Saluki Stadium is not a hard place to play, but this is a get-right spot for the Salukis. It is also very trappy, though. UND, I mean, they're getting off the bus ready to kick their ass. That's how they approach every single week. So this one has a sneaky game of the week feel to it because Valley football in mid-October, especially right before Halloween, things get weird.
I think either one of these teams will be satisfied with a one-point victory, and this one's going to be a war, Stone. Lindenwood is at number 7, Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech struggled in the weather in the Low Country of South Carolina last week. Lindenwood has been a good story. Their defense is pretty good, and they're coming along as a Division I program. But this Tennessee Tech squad ain't a bunch you want to see as you're coming along as a Division I program, or your defense has just been pretty good so far. That offense for Tennessee Tech is superlative. They're going to get up and down the field. I don't know if they're going to get to 60 like we predicted for them last week, but I know this, they're going to put up a whole lot of points, and Lindenwood will put up a whole lot of fight. But I'd be shocked if this one wasn't over with by about the time, you know, that gun sounds to end the third quarter.
There's no doubt about that. I would hate to be a Golden Eagle opponent coming off of a lackluster performance offensively, although weather permitted, right? We talked about that, but Tennessee Tech is going to treat Lindenwood like a punching bag. This team's going to get back on track. They're going to put up 40 plus points. I expect the offense to click here. Lindenwood, you just got to bat in the hatches here.
Stony Brook is at number 9, Monmouth. What's the game plan for Monmouth, Stone, every week?
Throw the football.
Well, that and get 3 defensive stops and you're going to win the football game.
Right.
But this Stony Brook team can also score. They've put up some points this season. This could be a shootout. This could have 52-48 game of the week, offensive fireworks, explosions, Michael Bay, however you want to qualify that. This game could be that. I'm excited for this one. Billy Kosh, a good coach. He'll have that Stony Brook offense ready to go. Roland Dempster can tote the mail, run the football. I'm excited for this one, Stone. I think this one could be a sneaky, really good ball game.
I do as well. And, Kosh, what you do is you tell your quarterback, hey, the punter's not going to take the field on Saturday. That's what it's going to take to beat these guys. And Stony Brook is more than capable offensively. We've seen them rattle some scoreboards here. But for Monmouth, this is a nice little test. They don't have many on their schedule. This here is one of the ones that you can point to.
Youngstown State is at number 10, Illinois State. Let's not put too fine of a point on it. Youngstown State's got to have this one, Lebanowitz. If they want that at-large berth to the national playoffs from the Valley, there's a whole lot of teams lining up to take maybe that fourth spot. And Youngstown doesn't have the easiest path of any of those people that are lining up with them. You got to go on the road. You got to beat Illinois State at their place. And you have a little hope. Why? Because Illinois State struggled to stop the quarterback run with NDSU and Cole Payton. And what does Youngstown State do? Just about as good as anybody who ain't named North Dakota State. They run the quarterback. This is an interesting game. Brock Spack will have his boys ready to go. Rittenhouse will spin it. They'll play defense. I'm not sure if there's any more of those knee camps around. They seem to be like Petrino's. Just when you think you've seen the last one, here pops up another one. Illinois State's a good football team. They're going to need every ounce of what they got to beat a Youngstown State team who was wearing a cologne this week. And that cologne is called Desperation.
There are so many good matchups in the MVFC here. This right here is one of them. Youngstown State, a team that had a whole lot of momentum, seems to have lost it, might be broken after last week's performance, getting beat up by UND. Here's the thing. Illinois State has a lot of bad tape to watch of Youngstown State only 7 days ago, and only 7 days to try to shake it if you're the Penguins, the flightless birds here. I think this game is a must-have for both, because we will lose hope in Illinois State if they used to lose to Youngstown. And if Youngstown wins, we have to reconsider them. Kind of a sneaky good team in the Valley who can do some damage.
UTRGV is at number 13, Lamar. Now, we've all seen the bad beat last week in the Lamar East Texas A&M game. And that's what's so lovely about college football, y'all. Every week you can tune in. Doesn't matter if you're 5 years old or you're 105 years old, and you will probably see something you have never seen before. Well, ain't nobody seen before how that Lamar game ended last week. It's all over the interwebs. Just Google Lamar football game finish if you haven't seen it. But UTRGV don't care about none of that. All they're doing is winning football games, and they're doing it in impressive fashion. This is a team that doesn't know they're a first-year college football program. They don't know that they're not supposed to be able to go in and compete at number 13, Lamar. And you know what? What they don't know ain't going to hurt them. This is going to be a good football game, a four-quarter ball game, I believe. And Lamar, you're going to have to fight, claw, and you're going to have to beat this Vaqueros team, because they're not going to beat themselves and hand it to you or lie down for you. Love this UTRGV squad, Stone.
It's tough sometimes emotionally to kind of get over a game like that and let the celebration stop and get on to the next. And this GV team doesn't give a damn. They don't know any better. So this one right here, please circle it, highlight it, watch this one. Lamar has a chance to trip and fall here. And it would be pretty exciting for UTRGV if they did.
And you know that it's a sneaky good game when it's got Stone Labanowitz talking about his emotions, y'all. I'm telling you, guy's a real sensitive fella. Merrimack is at number 16, Harvard. I'll take this one, Stone. Not a whole lot to see here, I don't think. Merrimack going to go to Harvard. Harvard quarterback Craig's going to put up some huge numbers. They're going to play pretty good defense. And unless Merrimack just has the game plan to end all game plans and Harvard helps them a whole bunch, I don't think there's a whole lot to see here. Now, this next game, I do believe there could be a whole lot to see in this one. Number 17, Abilene Christian is at Southern Utah. Southern Utah, why you think this game going to be good, Kevin? Southern Utah is 1-5. Southern Utah's got guts. They ain't quit. They have fought every week of this football season, Stone. And one of these weeks, they're going to put it all together. Could be this week. And we've seen Abilene Christian lay an absolute egg. If they don't play their A game, they're going to find themselves in a tussle. And if they find themselves in a tussle, they just might find themselves getting beat.
There's a chance. I don't think it's very big, but there still is a chance. Yes, for Abilene Christian's sake, you got the egg out of the way already. So you're woken up, right? You're not going to be surprised when a team gets you. But Southern Utah gives no dams whatsoever. They are battle tested, as funny as that sounds, as a team with one win on the season as we approach week 8. There are going to be points scored in this one by both units. Jam the over. This is free money right here. But Abilene, you gotta play some defense. This has to be the week, because Southern Utah, if you don't, they're gonna score 28 and they're gonna flirt with 30 plus. This one right here, I mean, as we go down the slate here, the games get better and better and better and better. This one right here is a good one.
Nichols is at number 19, Stephen F. Austin. This is a game that's usually ugly. It's a game that's usually one where running the football is paramount and playing defense and just letting the big guys up front on both sides of the ball determine the pace and also who's going to win the game. I don't believe this one's going to be any different than all those other games between Nichols and Stephen F. Austin. It is SFA's homecoming, so a little extra pressure there to want to perform. But Nichols, I know you like the quarterback, Stone. We just haven't seen that defense since week one that they showed against Incarnate Word. And I think we also learned that Incarnate Word's offense ain't no good. So maybe that defensive performance wasn't as good as we thought it was because the opponent wasn't as good as others thought they were.
If I'm Deuce Hogan and I take the field and I have an opportunity to ruin somebody's homecoming, a nationally ranked team, at that, I'm doing that. This game is going to be so stinking ugly, like you had mentioned. I smell cheese. A cheese for a rat, because this is a trap here for SFA and Nichols. They're entering the stage of the season where they have nothing to lose, and they're just trying to spoil whoever season that it is. And I think I might be taking a shot here on old Deuce Hogan. I think this game is an absolute coin flip.
Stetson is at number 20, Presbyterian. Stetson's bad, and PC is pretty darn good. I expect them to continue. You know, when you're in the Pioneer League, even if you're in first place in that league, you're not going to take yourself too seriously. You're just going to go out, have fun, play football. In PC, they do that. They shouldn't struggle with Stetson. Hampton is at number 21, Villanova. Stone, Villanova's done a nice job of playing good ball since that loss they had to Monmouth. And Hampton is not very good. I know you like that Villanova quarterback. Talk about him for just a minute.
Pat McQuaid is a gamer, and I am excited to sit down with our honorary captain of the week, that Villanova running back who sits next to Pat McQuaid in the backfield, Mr. David Avitt. David Avitt himself is a gamer, but Pat McQuaid is a guy, it seems like, in any situation, any down and distance, whatever amount of time is on the clock, whatever that score line is, he is just a touchdown throw away from changing the outcome of a ball game. And this team goes as he goes, and he's a young guy. So he's already solidified himself in a role in an offense that typically we know is one that scores a lot of points. Pat McQuaid has a rocket arm on not that big of a body size-wise, but he's got a lot of game. He's one of the more fun guys to watch in all of the subdivision. And Villanova, they're not going to lose anytime soon, so keep an eye on these guys.
Western Carolina is at the Citadel. This one is interesting to me, Stone, not just because it's the Citadel, but because what Western Carolina does on offense, the Citadel's not very good at stopping. And what the Citadel does on offense, Western Carolina is not all that good at stopping on defense. This one could be the most weird shootout you've ever seen in your life. Western Carolina might score on 2-play drives, and then the Citadel might score on 14 play drives. Just back and forth. Well, a whole lot more back and forth for Western than the Citadel, probably. The Citadel's going to probably be going in one direction with the ball for a while. But this one is interesting to me. It's just going to look weird on television, and I'm here for it, man. I think the Citadel's got a real shot to pull it off here.
Oh, do ya? Teron Dickens, sir, he thinks otherwise. Kevin, remember when your mama and daddy used to fill a donkey up with candy and hand you a bat?
You talking about my mama?
Listen, it's a fiesta in Charleston. And after the Mountains get done with the dogs, it's happy Halloween. There's candy all over the floor. I love that you have hope. But Teron Dickens, I don't think he's touched. I think there's a chance that he has another one of those funky 20-plus completions in a row. Kevin, I stand on the opposite side of the fence with my Dukes up ready to fight you here because Teron Dickens, one of my favorite players in all the subdivisions, somebody that, like Lindsey Scott, I told everybody before this season even kicked off, this dude has game. He could be the player of the year. Teron Dickens is going to lay it on El Cid. Kev, buckle up.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for my favorite time of the week, y'all. This is the pick segment. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I butt face mask, and we pick the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Up first, number one, North Dakota State is at Indiana State.
Indiana State. This is going to be a weird environment. It's an awkward place to play because there's 10 fans in the stands. Indiana State is probably going to score 7, but North Dakota State's going to score a million. Final score line here, the Bison 45, the Trees 7.
Not much to see here, y'all. Take number one, North Dakota State on the road over the Trees 42-10. Number two, South Dakota State is at Murray State.
South Dakota State, a lot to a little, in the words of Kevin Marshall. Not a whole lot to see here, folks. Jackrabbits win this one in a blowout fashion, 48-3.
They're going to make glue out that horse, y'all. Number two, South Dakota State wins, 45-13. Sacred Heart is at number three, Montana.
Montana, you got to get out of the gates here. You got to score at least 2 possessions in the first quarter to officially shake that rust and get back on track. And oh, guess what? You're playing at home again, Sacred Heart. They just can't hold a candlestick to you guys. Grizzlies, 38-10.
Bless their Sacred Hearts. Take number three, Montana, over Sacred Heart at home at Washington Grizzly Stadium. Grizz win 52-10. Number 22, West Georgia, is at number four, Tarleton State.
I thought about it, and then I thought about it a little more. I just couldn't do it. Tarleton State, Victor Gabalis, get your behind back in the lineup and win this football game. Tarleton State 35, West Georgia's 24.
Styles make fights, and these two ball clubs couldn't be more different. With West Georgia, it's defense and running game. The Texans, they're all offense. That basketball on grass, that defense is a little suspect. And I'm stubborn, just like West Georgia is going to be with that running game. Give me number 22, West Georgia, to upset number four, Tarleton State, on the road. West Georgia wins 28-27. Oof. Number six, North Dakota, is at number eight, Southern Illinois.
Southern Illinois, wire to wire, folks. Salukis, 42. North Dakota, 28.
The Fighting Hawks are not that hapless band of birds went on the road anymore, but the Salukis coming into this thing, boys, they are madder than a boiled owl. And I like teams that are upset, that are mad, that can't wait to get back out on the field and exercise the way they played the week before from their systems. I like that. I like it a whole bunch. Take number eight, Southern Illinois at home over number six, North Dakota. Salukis win 31-28. Lindenwood is at number seven, Tennessee Tech.
Buckle up, Lindenwood. Tennessee Tech 54 to Lindenwood's 8.
Soggy weather put a damper on Tennessee Tech's offense last week. but it'll take a flood for Lindenwood to have a prayer here. Take number 7, Tennessee Tech at home over Lindenwood, 38-13. Stony Brook is at number 9, Monmouth.
This game's iffy, very similar to West Georgia. I thought about it. I just can't get over the hump and pull the trigger. I think this is a weekend of chalk favorites galore. Monmouth wins this game in a high-scoring affair, 38-30.
Stony Brook's put up over 40 points twice this year and 35 points once. They're going to need all of that this week. But I think Monmouth gets those 3 stops on defense they're looking for, and Monmouth will win. Take number 9, Monmouth over Stony Brook in a high-scoring affair, 42-35. Youngstown State is at number 10, Illinois State.
Redbirds are going to creep out of here with a victory, 28-20, in what is just a Missouri Valley classic. They're going to want to get cute, but realize, oh, who are we? We're teams that ultimately like to put the football on the ground and like to lean on you. And Illinois State is favorable in this matchup. Like I said, 28-20.
The Penguins find themselves on very thin ice. Y'all see what I did there? And they really need this one for playoff consideration. But the Redbirds are at home, and I think they'll prevail. Take number 11, Illinois State over Youngstown State in a close one. Redbirds win 31-28. UTRGV is at number 13, Lamar.
Lamar had their scare. They have, and teams that have had that scare, teams that have laid eggs earlier in the season, they tend to not get caught by surprise here, so I don't think that happens. Lamar wins this game 30 to UTRGV's 13.
Lamar got lucky last week, but to have a special type of season, man, you need one of those. You gotta have one of those. And the Vaqueros, they've been a great story. I really like that football team, but I like this Lamar football team a little more. Take number 13, Lamar at home over UTRGV in a close one, 24-17. Merrimack is at number 16, Harvard.
42 to Merrimack's 13.
This one is not going to be anything like that battle with Hampton Roads at the thing called the Merrimack took place in back during the war. I like Harvard to win this one decisively, 43-13. Number 7, Abilene Christian is at Southern Utah.
Thought about it. Again, definitely not pulling this trigger. Give me Abilene Christian. Give me the Wildcats. A lot to a lot. Abilene Christian, 45. Southern Utah, 30.
The motto for Southern Utah may very well be, everybody fights, nobody quits. And I know that most of y'all have heard that before. And I believe this week is the week that they put it all together. Take Southern Utah over number 17, Abilene Christian, 38-37. Nichols is at number 19, Stephen F. Austin.
Upset special of the week, folks. I found one. Nichols, 28. Stephen F. Austin, 24.
Not me, sir. This is usually a tough, hard-fought, and physical game between these two. This one's not going to be any exception, but I'll take the Texas hero over the Louisiana hero. Number 19, Stephen F. Austin wins at home over Nichols, 28-17. Stetson is at number 20, Presbyterian.
Stetson stinks, and Colin Hurst, quarterback for PC, he doesn't stink. He's actually really good at football. PC 35 to Stetson's 7.
Stetson's all hat, no cattle, and this will be all blue hose here. Number 20, PC wins in Clinton, South Carolina, 38-13. Hampton is at number 21, Villanova.
I like Villanova. They're kind of coming into their own in this 2025 season, and you take that combination of Pat McQuaid and guys like David Avett, and they roll here against Hampton. And Hampton's not just a slouch, right? They're not a bad club. Villanova, 30 to Hampton's 21.
Villanova's been playing good ball lately. I mentioned that in the preview segment. I expect that trend to continue. Take number 21, Villanova. I think they roll at home over Hampton, 38-13. Western Carolina is at the Citadel.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I should plead the fifth or tell you what I have written down here, but Western Carolina 48 to the Citadels 13.
Both of these teams come in hotter than fish grease, y'all, but there's more fish in the low country, and I am tempted to take Citadel in this one. But the worst thing you can do to an athlete at the Citadel is tell them they're any good. So I'm not going to make that mistake. Take Western Carolina to win in Charleston over to Citadel. Cats beat the Dogs 30-28.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
What's up, everybody? You know the voice. You know the face most of the time, but you know when I talk like this, it's time we bring on an honorary captain. And as always, they're not solo. Riding shotgun is a man that I will introduce, but somebody who packs a punch, somebody who I really enjoy watching, and somebody who my co-host Kevin Marshall claims is the best running back in all of the CAA, Mr. David Abbott. David, thank you so much for taking time out of your game week, big game week against Hampton, to chop it up with FCS Nation and give everybody an opportunity to learn a little bit about who David is behind that face mask. We appreciate you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I mean, it's honestly an honor to be able to go on the show, and I'm happy to be here, happy to talk it up.
That's right, and alongside him, man with the plan, a guy that I'm very happy to introduce, and from this moment forward is forever a friend of the show and FOS, Mr. Grant Price, Managing Director in the Radnor office up there in PA, or out there in PA, depending on where you are listening to us right now. Grant, you as well, busy week. I know you have plans to watch Villanova beat up on Hampton and whatnot, but as far as where we stand midweek, I appreciate you for taking time out of it to chop it up with FCS and as well get Villanova fans an opportunity to learn a little bit more about who you are and why David is in the mix this year.
Yeah, appreciate you having me, Stone, and excited to be here today.
Very first season that you guys are a part of this cause, David, I ask every single honorary captain of the week this very same question. When you were first approached, initial thoughts, feelings, kind of what was running through your mind?
Honestly, I felt just like kind of honored because like for people to be able to choose me and to like see that I'd be a good person to represent like such a good cause, it made me just pretty happy. I felt pretty good about it, and honestly, I'm excited to keep going forward with it.
And Grant, why David? I think this is something that our audience, FCS fans, Wildcat fans, deserve to know the answer to, because this is our third season doing this now, and the alumni list just seems to keep growing. I mean, there are guys like Efton Chisholm, David Walker, Gray Zabel, NFL draft picks now that are on this alumni list who helped us raise what is now over $100,000 in our third season, combining all of the seasons. What is it about David that, and those are just NFL players, those are on the field guys, but who they are off the field, I think speaks volumes. And if you go back, whether it's listening to honorary captain interviews or just listening to their head coaches speak about them, they hold them to the utmost respect and to a higher standard than most of their teammates and other players all in locker rooms across the country. Why David? Why does David fit the mold?
Yeah, I mean, for all the reasons you just mentioned in terms of the guys on the field, right? David certainly fits that mold of just an exceptional athlete and player in the conference at such a young age. I believe he's one of the, if not the youngest guy as part of this program as a sophomore. So it's rare that you find an athlete and a guy as young as he is, as mature as he is. And David will tell you there's a lot of really good teammates of his that were certainly deserving of the honorary captain honor. And it was a tough decision, but talking to a lot of guys in and around the program. And once I met David, you know, we were really looking for someone who was going to represent their school, Alex's and NM in a positive light, and someone that ultimately is a good teammate, role model in the community. And I after meeting David, I couldn't think of anybody better than him that that fits that mold. So I think we picked the right guy. Fired up to have him.
I do as well. And on Saturdays, I feel a little stronger about the decision too, watching David play some football here. Okay, Grant, you were approached, whether it was by Chris Schenkel or somebody else in your realm, about this initiative, about joining this initiative. Kind of take me through your thoughts there, why you wanted to jump into the mix. And then also in our very first season with this thing, we had 12 athletes, 12 offices, and this thing's almost at that 20 number. We've kind of broadened this. We've gone around the country, have expanded this. In our very first year, a little under $50,000. And then in year two, nearly $70,000. So we're just cruising past that six-figure number, and we're rocking and rolling right now, just about $30,000 raised as we head into week eight. But for you, when you were approached, why did you feel so strongly about it to get involved and get dancing with us?
Yeah, for me, in our firm, it was a privilege and an honor to have the opportunity. I think the mission is everything that we stand for. And Northwestern Mutual, as I know it's been explained in the podcast before, we've had a longstanding partnership with Alex's Lemonade Stand that stretches over a decade, and have donated a lot of time and resources and money to the foundation over time. And as soon as Chris approached me about it and gave us the opportunity, it was an honor. I don't know who wouldn't want to be involved with this this program, and it just feels amazing to be a part of something greater. And so yeah, it was a no-brainer for me when Chris came up to me and asked us to be a part of it. I said yes immediately.
And there's a question that I will ask both of you guys, but David, having a grip on that Wildcat fan base and kind of what they mean to you guys, how they propel you to play this weekend, for example, at Hampton, you guys are hosting them, right? So using that crowd, that fan base to kind of get you guys past that finish line and rip off four wins in a row. There was a quote that Chris Schenkel dropped on our opening interview this year with signal caller for South Dakota, Aiden Bauman. He said, "Watching fandom turn into real impact is exactly why we're doing this." David, when you hear that quote and you think about this Villanova fan base, why is this a match made in heaven for them getting to back you in all of this, raising money for ultimately stomping out childhood cancer? When you think about that Wildcat fan base, what does that quote mean to you? Watching fandom turn into real impact, or what could it mean for you?
I mean, here at Villanova, we really preach a lot of unitas and caritas. So that's really the community helping other people. So I mean, doing something like Alex Lemonade Stand, going out like the extra mile for your fellow neighbor is like, I feel like that's just instilled in Villanova's morals. So I feel like a lot of students in Villanova already help with the community. So I feel like something like this, like Alex Lemonade Stand, a good cause, I feel like they'd just be more inclined to like want to support. So especially if they're fans of the Villanova football team and they see us like, you know, supporting us doing the lemon drop challenge, like I feel like they would want to support just because, you know, it's a good cause.
Yeah, and Grant, for the surrounding cities and the people that you've met along the way being in that area who support Villanova, that quote, watching fandom turn into impact, kind of what does that, and like I said in the latter, what could that mean for David and for you guys, kind of having an opportunity to tap into a group of people that you in your professional life haven't had an opportunity to, and just to know what's on the horizon is exciting.
As we're working with clients, and I'm working with clients in my personal practice, we're talking to folks about planning financially for their future. And as you spend time with folks that have a philanthropic mindset and want to give back to the community, they're looking for ways to make a positive impact in the community, right? So we spend a lot of time with clients and even candidates to join our firm that we talk to. And one of the first things that a lot of people mention is how others focused we are as an organization, right? And I think getting an opportunity to collaborate with our clients and going back to them and sharing with them what we're doing is really powerful, and it gives them an outlet to make an impact for a great cause and stomp out childhood cancer, which is ultimately why we're all here. And I have a unique lens as well. My wife actually works as a physician assistant in pediatrics, so the cause hits close to home for me. She's around sick kids all day, and so being able to share that with her and outwardly make that impact has been pretty special.
Yeah, different lens is important. I will ask you both if you've personally been affected, but just to dig a little deeper, if this is your first time listening to an honorary captain of the week interview segment of the show, I always say it's my favorite. It is because I get to learn a little bit more about these athletes who dominate the turf and the grass all over the country on Saturdays and sometimes not Saturdays, sometimes Friday nights. Alex Lemonade Stand, that foundation began with a single front yard lemonade stand started by the 4-year-old Miss Alex Scott, the queen. She was battling neuroblastoma. She wanted to raise money to help doctors and help kids like her. But by the time she passed away at age 8, just guess how much money she had raised, guys? Over $1 million. 8 years old, raising $1 million for the cause. Today, the legacy, it surmounts everything that I know her mother Liz and her father Jay could have ever possibly imagined. And now the things that they get to do, the places they get to travel, and the people they get to meet, all because of their young daughter Alex, I think is something that it's tough to put into words. But I think at its core, what we're doing here right now is carrying on Alex's legacy. And Grant, you talked about your wife being a physician and just seeing sick kids and understanding kind of what it is that they're actually going through and how families are affected. David, I will start with you. Has anybody in your life personally, indirectly been affected by cancer that has ultimately affected you and kind of additionally made a certain why more strong in your back pocket?
So actually this year my aunt passed away from cancer. She beat it the first time and it came back. And just like the way I felt at that moment, like the way my family and like even our close friends around us, our church was affected by her passing, like I can't just imagine that in a child's life to other families. Like, so honestly, just whatever I could do to help, like help that feeling that I felt not be affected to somebody else like I'm gonna do. And honestly, Alex Summers Nathanstan embodies that. I just want to do pay it forward, you know, because I understand like it's the worst feeling, someone being affected by cancer at that age. Like I couldn't, like it kind of hurts to like speak about it because it happened so recently, but I'm gonna do whatever I can. And I feel like Alex Lemonade is a good route for me to take to support families affected by this.
Listen, David, first of all, I appreciate your perspective and to just get on here having met me for the first time. And I think this is something you probably haven't said to, or something that a lot of Wildcat fans don't know. So if this is their first time hearing and understanding something like that, not only do I appreciate the perspective, but I know the fan base does. And it's just further reason to get behind you because you're not doing this, you know, willy-nilly. You do this because it's your life, because you feel it, because you know what those families felt or are feeling currently. So I absolutely appreciate the perspective. And Grant, before I ask you the same question, David, I want to ask you, playing football at Villanova, you're in the FCS. I'm a former FCS guy. Grant, you grew up in Normal, so you know what FCS football is through and through, and now a fan of the Villanova team. You know what it's all about, and you know it's the purest form of football. But on the NIL side, this is unlike something that I've ever seen in the FCS. I know for a damn fact that it doesn't exist, something like this, something even remotely close to this, right? Having athletes at the forefront and driving, whether it's money or just downright general awareness to a cause like childhood cancer and how we can do our part to putting an end to it. David, is this a unique NIL initiative? Is this something that is just different than most? Do you see it in a category of its own?
I mean, when I got it, I just felt like it was more of a responsibility, like to highlight, like to really highlight what people are going through and highlight a good cause that can support people. So I didn't even really look at it as NIL at first. I was really just looking at it as like, all right, but I get to do a good thing that people will see. And like, to honestly, it's an honor for my face to be associated with such a good cause. So I didn't really see it at NIL at first, but I don't think there's a lot like it, because I feel like most NIL deals are just like, you know, like, oh yeah, drink this drink or do this. But nah, this is a different, this is like leading a good cause, leading an effort to support the research for childhood cancer.
Effort's pretty accurate, right? Because it's forward facing. You're going to show face at events and meet Wildcat fans, whatever it is that you and Grant and team decide to do with it. But whether it's, you know, signing a 7-year-old's jersey who is a fan of David Avid, who watched him score last week, or just things like that that you don't get from, right, an energy drink deal, you don't get from a car dealership. NIL partnership. This is just different. It lives in a world of its own, and we're only in season three, and this thing's just skyrocketing. And the more we bring on guys like you, David, the farther this thing will go. So not only do I appreciate your perspective, but I also appreciate your perspective on the ladder and the initiative that we have going here. And Grant, kind of same question to you in a sense of, is this something different that you didn't really expect to tie the financial service industry into college football? You see in the FBS more so that these companies are just, you know, signing checks for athletes and, you know, sometimes never even shaking their hands. Kind of, how do you see this living a lot differently than all of those that we could talk about, but we'd be wasting breath?
Well, I'm fortunate in my personal financial planning practice. I've had the opportunity to work with a number of coaches and athletes all over the country. And so I've kind of been at the forefront of some of the NIL initiatives since it began several years ago. And on the FBS level, right, you see a lot of it's turned into a business, right? And I'm fully supportive of athletes getting paid
Of course.
and earning what they should. But I think it has turned into a business, and a lot of it is dollar signs and checks, right? And it's not as focused as it could be, maybe on the impact. And I think what makes this opportunity so unique, as both of you already alluded to, is just the direct impact you can have on a great cause in the community. And so, absolutely, this is when Chris presented the idea to me. It was just like, I've never heard of anything like this in the NIL space. And so absolutely, it provides a different perspective.
Speaking of perspective, Grant, I want to ask you the same question that I asked David. Has somebody in your life, directly or indirectly, been affected by the damn disease we call cancer? And has it, you know, made you think differently, not only about what we're doing right here, but just about life in general?
A few extended family members have unfortunately, my great aunt passed away several years ago. Towards the end of her life, she ended up developing a form of lung cancer. And then some other friends of family members that I've I think it impacts all of us in some capacity, unfortunately, which is why we're here to stomp it out, right? And clients as well. I've had a couple clients that have gone through it or have had close family members experience it, and so yeah, it's impacted me in a number of ways.
I think an underrated part about having managing directors, managing partners, anybody from, recruiting offices in Northwestern Mutual in that realm, and then athletes, whether it's Villanova, whether it's North Dakota, whether it's Florida A&M, right? I think an underrated part about all of this that there's a chance if you're listening to this interview that cancer has impacted your life one way or another, for better or for worse. If you beat it or you lost a loved one, and I think understanding what Northwestern Mutual does for families that are impacted is something that I don't think we talk about enough when I have men and women like you on here, Grant. So, is there something to speak about how, you never know which turn life is going to take, and how proactive you can be in planning your future, especially financially, for people going through something like a family member or like a friend battling cancer? Is there something that you can speak on behalf of Northwestern Mutual when it comes to that?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that, Stone. And I think yeah, absolutely. What we do is rooted in we consider it holistic financial planning, right? So it's taking a look at all the different twists and turns that life may throw your way. And sometimes people just look at that from a balance sheet perspective and what the stock market's going to do tomorrow or in retirement and try to plan for those things. And that's certainly a lane that we focus on with clients, but one of the areas that we find often underaddressed that a lot of people don't think about until unfortunately something happens is the risk side of the plan as well, right? So what happens if someone you love or care about is no longer here? How does that impact your future, right? And those are uncomfortable and difficult conversations for people to have, but they're necessary conversations to have. And we kind of jokingly say this, but it's not a joke. We want to put GoFundMe out of business, right? We want to find a way to make sure that families are taken care of no matter what, right? And they're planning effectively for their future. And it starts with a conversation, right? It just starts with a conversation with a trusted advisor who can take time to really build a relationship with you and understand what your family's goals are, what you've already done from a planning perspective. And our advisors are, in my opinion, best in class at doing that and making sure that families have security around whatever is going to happen in their future, good or bad.
I love it. I love it. I appreciate you sitting here having a chat with David Abbott, running back for the Villanova Wildcats, and himself, Mr. Grant Price, managing director in the Radnor office out there in the good old PA, sitting here chopping it up, giving Wildcat fans, giving FCS Nation just an opportunity to learn a little bit more about some of the guys that make this Villanova football team go, the facility go, a lot of the outside noise. Make it louder, make it quieter. That's what Grant's doing. Hey, will you talk about twisting and turning, Grant? That is something that Mr. David Abbott is oh so familiar with, twisting and turning when he's toting the rock here. A little over 500 yards already on the season. You're coming off a game with 17 carries. David, you are surging. Your team is surging right now. Top 20 nationally in the entire country. Most definitely a playoff team. I don't think that there's a team in the CAA that is as confident as you guys are, especially in the backfield. Just holistically talk about kind of where the season's at, where you guys stand right now, and ultimately the vibes in the facility, man. You guys are a really good 4-2 ball club right now.
I feel the vibes are up. I feel like, we're coming off some pretty hard wins. Like we were down, I think like 11 in the first half. Like we had to come back and surge like as a unit. So I feel like we're pretty up. We're definitely not complacent. We still have to finish out the season. You gotta respect every opponent that you see. Like last year, Hampton gave us the works. Like they got a lot. They're gonna throw the whole house at you. So we're pretty excited, but we're locked in for this week. And just ready, honestly. The only way we can make the playoffs is if we get it done. So we got a job to do.
Yeah, there's no doubt you got a job to do this week against Hampton. What's some of that tape look like without giving, a lot away? Not that I think there are any spies listening right now, but what does that Hampton tape look like, and kind of what's it going to take for you guys to clean up some of the mistakes last week and rip off 4 wins in a row?
They got some good athletes. They're a younger team. They got a younger front, but they got some dudes who can really go. Pretty sure 51, one of their linebackers, he's a pretty good guy. Athletic, plays with some physicality. So I feel like if, but I feel like we can, I feel like we can dominate this game. And truthfully be honest, we just gotta be on point. We gotta try to minimize the MAs, minimize the flags, and I feel like we can come out with the win.
There's no doubt. Good old football talk right there. Good old coaches talk from a sophomore now who is getting more media trained by the week. It seems like, hey, David, I played quarterback in the Missouri Valley, so any opportunity that I have when I'm talking to an honorary captain who is standing next to or catching passes from or lining up across from one of the country's top quarterbacks, I always force a question in there about Mr. Pat McQuaid is what I'll do here. He's been efficient as all hell, it seems, this season, and he's found himself solidified into a role and kind of carrying the torch and just moving and chugging along into the future here. What can be said about Pat and kind of what makes him so good? I see him as a kind of a heady football player. He's got a little bit of a gamer in him, and he's just efficient. You don't see balls hit the turf, but what is it from somebody who stands next to him time and time again on Saturdays? What makes Pat so good?
I mean, that kid can just ball. Like, he could throw that ball. Like, he could really throw. And I like, honestly, he's a team guy. Like, people love playing for Pat. He came in and it was just like he clicked. Like, it looked like he has been in this program for like 4 years. Like, he really embodies what the team spirit is. Like, he honestly, he could have been a captain. I feel like he has like asserted to that leader role on our offense, and he really stepped up as a quarterback. So, and I love watching him throw. Like, I'm not gonna lie, sometimes he pulls the ball, I'm not even mad, because I know he's gonna do his job. Like, he's gonna throw it, we're gonna get that completion. Like, and he can just ball. Like, him and Luke got a strong connection. They making it work. So I'm really excited to keep playing with Pat for the rest of the year.
Not very often you will hear a running back say that it's okay. The quarterback can pull the ball and throw it, even though, I would have picked up six or seven. It's okay. That just shows the kind of culture that's being built out there in Villanova country. Grant, what's it been like having just I don't know, being not being, but having more of an inside look into this program now that your relationship with David has grown to what it is, and we're not even halfway through the season, or we're kind of right at that halfway mark. How cool has it been also to have that inside look in the locker room, and David's schedule and these college football players, people roll their eyes at this all the time, but it's a full-time job, right? I mean, it truly is. It's tough to balance life, what we call work. I mean, we're in the facility every single day of our lives. A lot of the times, cleats are on the turf at 5 a.m. What's it been, Grant, to just learn a little bit more about this Villanova team and kind of by default, all in a good sense, kind of be more involved in all this and be a bigger fan than you probably once were?
It's been really cool, getting to know David and understand his schedule and how he works and all that's been really cool. I shared with you off the record before we hopped on, Stone, that I have some background in the football space as well. So I have, I think, a little bit of a unique perspective that maybe some other managing directors or managing partners don't have. And one of the things that really stands out to me, I had an opportunity to spend some time with Coach Ferrante in his office several weeks ago, and we were just getting introduced and catching up a little bit. And he was talking about how he runs the program over there like a family, right? And that really stood out to me. And I think David can probably attest to that. He's obviously around it a lot more than I am, but I just respect the hell out of that, right? I think you see a lot of that grind mentality in the football world, which is necessary, I think, to win. But at the same time, you're all going to battle together. And when you have a coach and a leadership team that treats it like a family, I think it's really special. So it's been cool to get that insight and have a lot of respect for what they're building over there. And over here in Villanova country, I think people tend to look at Villanova as a basketball school with all the success that they've had over the years. And it's been really cool to see how the football program has taken a leap here over the last several years.
Huge leap, huge leap into that contender spot, and it's bona fide. Grant, what are some similarities that you see in athletes, college football players? Let's just be specific to advisors, to managing partners, managing directors, people that you work with on a daily basis. What are some parallels? What are some similarities that you've just come to realize, I suppose, throughout the years?
I think they truly embody work ethic. People talk about, oh, I have work ethic, or I work really hard. And I don't know if people who have been in college athletics really understand what it means to work. So I know David embodies that, and most of the advisors that we work with that are former athletes exhibit that trait. And one quote that Nick Saban shared a long time ago that has always resonated with me is that high achievers hate mediocre people and mediocre people hate high achievers. And
Yep.
we're always looking for high achievers. And I think the people in our organization are high achievers, and a lot of the athletes you spend time with fit that mold.
I'm stealing that quote. Say it again.
I stole it too, so feel free. I don't take any credit for it.
What was it? What was it again?
High achievers hate mediocre people, and mediocre people hate high achievers.
I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. And of course, it comes from somebody like Nick Saban. Not a bad guy to steal quotes from. Seems
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
he's got him on deck, ready to just spit him out. I think there's a stat out there. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Grant, but 1 in 5 advisors in Northwestern Mutual are former athletes themselves. Why is that? Like, why is that the case? I think that's something that is going to translate to a conversation we're going to have in a second about one of the best, if not the best, internship programs in the entire nation, but kind of why. And I think it further parlays into a question I often ask: why are athletes at the forefront of this initiative? Why is it important for us that David leads the way in raising money and putting his hand up for a cause like this? Why athletes?
Yeah, I think I touched on the work ethic piece,
Of
right?
course.
And having that trait is not something that everybody has. And in this career, what we do is very challenging, right? Our advisors have the opportunity to build their businesses alongside Northwestern Mutual, and building a business is not an easy task. And we like to talk about the gift of high expectations in our firm. And I think when you come from an athletic background and you've played college sports and you've been exposed to that, especially with a winning program like Villanova, coach gives them the gift of high expectations. And so when they step into our organization and we demand the same of them, in order for them to launch their businesses and run a successful practice, they've already been exposed to that, right? So there's a lot of parallels, from the sports world into the business world that we run.
And David, if I could put you in an auditorium and hand you a microphone in front of all of David's teammates, all of his classmates, everybody who attends the university, as to why the internship program at Northwestern Mutual is worth a look. I mean, since 1967, well over 65,000 college students have participated in it. And I think when you see a stat like 98% of them came out of it saying that it was influential, that it was a huge part of their life and helped direct kind of where they were headed. What would you say to those teammates and classmates of David as to why it's worth a look?
I mean, like you said, it's a great program. Like, not only just financial skills, you can learn skills for the rest of your life that you need to know. Like if you can't really speak to new people, you're gonna be able to do this in the workforce. So
Yep.
being able to get that early experience in early with trusted licensed people. My parents actually have been with Northwestern Mutual since they've been in this country. So like being able to see how they work and how they actually help people in their everyday lives and their for planning for the future has been beneficial for me. So just being able to be part of an internship for a whole summer, like, you probably learned so much more than I have already.
I love it. Grant, is there anything that you would add on top of David? I feel like he hit a lot there.
Yeah, and not a whole lot to add. I mean, I think what's unique about our internship, as David alluded to, is the real hands-on experience that you get alongside advisors, and you learn a lot. And over half of our field leadership, so that's managing directors like myself, and actually fall into this mold, managing partners, are former interns, right? And so if you go through that experience, it really gives you a leg up in terms of your career growth and trajectory.
Love it, and I appreciate you guys. And I don't think there's much more that David you could have done. And I said this when we first got rolling that you're here to give Wildcat fans and FCS Nation in general, fans of all FCS teams, an opportunity to learn more about who you are underneath that bucket. I think you've done just that. I think you've impressed a lot of people, myself included. And it's no secret why the hell you're the honorary captain this week, right? It makes all the sense in the world. And Grant, it's all the sense in the world why you chose David. And I can't thank you guys enough. But now it's Wildcat Nation. It's their time to do part in all of this. And I think there are a few ways we can go about donating to David in that Radnor Network office and everything that Grant has put together for David. And FCSNationRadio.com on the right-hand side of the screen, you can't miss it. Alex's Lemonade Stand. They have their own wing dedicated to them. You click on it, you can click donate, pledge, check the standings. You can see all 17 current athletes that we have fighting for the cause. You can donate, whether it's $1,
whether it's $5, whether it's $10, that also is appreciated. And if you're not in a position financially to donate some of your money, there are also ways that you can do that without pulling out your wallet. Grant, kind of tell the people what that is.
Yeah. Alex Lemonade Stand has partnered with Northwestern Mutual and given us the opportunity to do what's called the Lemon Top Challenge. So you can take a picture, just literally place a lemon on top of your head, snap a picture, tag Northwestern Mutual, Alex Lemonade Stand on social media. $10 will be donated by the foundation to the foundation. So, it's a fantastic way to, donate a little bit of money by doing a good cause, taking a silly picture. And, it's a great opportunity.
And it's easy, guys. You can post it on any single platform you want. Just make sure you tag the right people. Hashtag tap the rock, I believe, is the one that you want to use for David Avitt's cause and everything that Rider Network Office has put in place. So use the Lemon Top Challenge. Use FCSNationRadio.com. There are ways to get this thing done. David, I will start with you, sir. I cannot thank you enough for giving the show some time this week and getting a chance to learn why it is you're here and why it is that you've dedicated your entire football season to kids fighting childhood cancer.
It's an honor. I'm honestly blessed to be able to be part of something like this. And I've always wanted to be on the radio, so it's a plus for me too.
I love it. And Grant, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Stone. It's been an honor. I appreciate you taking the time and appreciate everything you guys over at FCS Nation have done to help support this great cause.
That's going
to
do it for the honorary captain of the week, Mr. David Avitt, Wildcat running back, Mr. Villanova himself, and Grant Price, managing director up there in the Radnor office. See you on the other side. But for right now, you're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted and produced by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. And like always, do y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.